So I'd like to talk a little bit, and I'll make it easy for myself by talking in English. I'd like to talk about the way wisdom and compassion are connected and support each other and support us, whoever we are. And in that nice advert for the weekend, I think your group used the word flying and had this image of flying. And really it's a good image because if we know to take off, Lamri, take off, using wisdom and compassion, then we fly. Life feels very light and free. And they say work together, the heart and the mind. So it is important to understand that because most of us have had some practice and some interest in awareness, in paying attention, and we're good at reflection, and we're good at thinking, and the Western education makes sure that we know to think. And we pay attention. And the paying attention in a frame of meditation, in the framework of a meditation practice, as we've been doing it and defining it, is about getting close. Instead of being far away, disconnected, on the surface, not engaged, only interested in what's important, what we seem to be important for our interessim, ourselves right now. But awareness gets us close, and we practice it on very simple places like that normally we don't know that we breathe, or walking that normally we don't know that we walk, or how our head feels that normally we don't know we have a head unless we have a headache. So it's reconnecting us with our existence. That's the process of being aware, being mindful. And this closeness, it actually does make us closer to life. Even though we feel, well, it's just a breath, or it's just feet on the ground, or it's just a feeling passing by. But actually what's really happening is it gets us close to life and begins to reduce boundaries. And the boundaries are usually about defense. So we close ourselves in ourselves and build boundary to life because we feel life is threatening, life is problem, we need to protect ourselves, so we tend to shut down or close in and build boundaries. And this is, we talked about this before, this is natural. This is not pathological, but at a certain point we have to begin to say, what's the cost of all the time living inside boundaries? What price do we pay for our boundaries? So meditation brings us out into life, more connected, even though some people say, oh, meditation, all you do is you go inside yourself and shut yourself away from life. It's exactly the opposite. Although I have to say that if meditation is not used right, is not understood properly, then it can go in that direction. And there are people I know, and there are even teachers I know, that from one reason or another do tend to push people into too much withdrawing and closing down inside internal process. And this is not the way it should be. And it's certainly not the way any authentic path in the Dharma or outside the Dharma will teach. Because the spiritual life is not about disconnecting ourselves. It's about reconnecting ourselves. And then we discover that closeness to others and closeness to life is natural. It's just that we built boundary and then we look at life from over the wall, like we look at our neighbours. Build a wall between us and our neighbours and then look over what's happening over there. And that's what we do with ourselves. We build a wall and then we try to look at what's happening out there, actually. Because we really want to be connected, but we're a little afraid, so we build our walls. And when we actually begin to let the walls go down through connecting, through empathia, through intimacy, we find we were there in the first place. We never really lived. We just built a wall, but we can't be separate. There's no way that we can be separate. Like what Rumi says, you know, how can water separate itself from water? We just can't do it. So we try to separate ourselves by building our walls and defenses and keeping life away, but actually it's impossible, and we're in illusion to think we can. And meditation is about opening and insight and wisdom is about showing us the truth. It's not showing us something that's not real. Showing us the truth that we always were connected and we can't be locked up in a box. We're just made of the world. The world is us and we are the world. Every piece of us is made from the world and we go back to it. We left it. So that closeness is an important understanding and wisdom and a natural one. And this natural closeness is basically compassion. It's basically the intimacy, the closeness is actually compassion. If we feel that, we know it, we live like that, we're living a compassionate life. It's by itself. So we think, well, compassion is high place, spiritual, up there somewhere, for the bodhisattvas. And I have to do many, many years before I learn the Dalai Lama is compassion, embodiment of compassion, but poor little me, I don't know how to be compassionate. I've just got problems. But actually, if we look at it more carefully, the understanding of connectedness, as a Zen teacher said, affinity, the fact that we are like others and in the world, that's already compassion. If we kind of just know that to some extent. So it's quite ordinary in a way. It's not so big. It doesn't need to be so big. Compassion is just being with. Closeness. And it's the active part of wisdom. Wisdom and compassion go together. Wisdom opens the door, and compassion shows us what's there when the door is open. And it's an interesting fact that compassion, for example, in both the Tibetan and the Jewish context, is male. Oh, compassion must be female. No, it's actually male. It's on the male side of the Tree of Life in Kabbalah, in the Eitz Chaim, the Sefirot. Compassion is on the male side. And why is that? And the reason is that wisdom, binah, if you like, in the Kabbalistic language, wisdom is being. Therefore, it's like the mother. It's female. Wisdom is being. We practice this. Being is the basis of wisdom. It's not knowledge. It's the sense of being. Awareness is quite passive in a way, like we were saying before in the meditation instruction. Awareness is just there. Compassion goes out and looks and sees what through the door. So compassion is the active part of wisdom. What's there? How am I with life? I see life. I am with life. It's moving. It's a movement. It's out there. It's awareness in movement, in connection. So it's male. And in the Tibetan tradition also, compassion is action, active. The compassion and action are not so different. All life acts, and we have to shift that to compassion. And it's somehow the taste of wisdom. It's the taste. It's called the compassion is the taste of wisdom. How does wisdom taste? Tam shel chokhmah or bina. Well, how does it taste? It tastes of togetherness. That's its taste. It tastes of being with. It tastes of unity. Achdut. And we feel it, we go down the street. How are we when we walk down the street to Rehov Dizengoff? How are we with others, with the pavement we walk on, the Midrehov, with the people who pass by, with the buses and the noise, with ourselves, with all the things we see that people want us to buy? And how are we with all of that? How are we closed? Are we shut down? Or are we open? And with everything. I really enjoy it when once a week I teach in Tel Aviv, come down from Klil. Klil is a land of thorns and rocks and many children and the sea, and once a week I'm in Tel Aviv, and I must say how much I enjoy it. It's really a joyful experience when I feel like a child walking about in the streets and watching this amazing magic display, the drama of life. So wisdom always has a taste. Awareness always has a taste. And I want to read, if you want to get a feeling for it, the best writer, I think, who writes about this so beautifully, without calling it big names, wisdom and compassion, but it's in the way he writes, is of course Thich Nhat Hanh. He writes so beautifully. I'll just give you a small example. Thich Nhat Hanh, Thai. You can look him up. He's written 50 books. He's a Vietnamese. He's rather seriously sick at the moment, but he's a Vietnamese Buddha, basically. Around us, life bursts forth with miracles. A glass of water. A ray of sunshine. A leaf. A caterpillar, flower, laughter, raindrops. If you live in awareness, it's easy to see miracles everywhere. Each human being is a huge multiplicity of miracles. Eyes that see thousands of colors, shapes, and forms. Ears that hear a bee fly, or the sound of thunder. A brain that can examine a speck of dust as easily as the entire cosmos. A heart that beats in rhythm with the heartbeat of all beings. when we are tired, discouraged by life's daily struggles. We may not notice these miracles, but they are always there. Have a look at the tree outside. Look at it with complete attention. It's truly a miracle. If you notice it, you will take good care of it, and you too are part of its miraculousness. Even after caring for it for a short time, its leaves are already greener and shinier. It's exactly the same with the people who are around you. Under the influence of awareness, you become more attentive, more understanding, more loving. And your presence not only nourishes you and makes you lovelier, but it also enhances them. Our entire society can be changed by one person's peaceful presence. Our minds create everything. The majestic mountain top, shining white with snow. This is you yourself when you contemplate it. Its existence depends on your awareness. When you close your eyes, as long as your mind is present, the mountain is there. Sitting in meditation with several senses closed, you feel the presence of the whole universe. Why? Because the mind is there. If your eyes are closed, it is so that you can see better. The sights and sounds of the world are not your enemies. Your enemy is forgetfulness, the absence of awareness. What makes compassion very clear is that we are still vulnerable. Whether we, whatever our awareness, how our awareness is, we are vulnerable. We do get lonely, we do get isolated, we do hurt, our bodies hurt, we do get sick, we do get rejected, we do get sad, we are in conflict. These things happen. This is samsara. These things happen. And we do get contracted. With kavets. I had a session with some relatively advanced Dharma practitioners, which was the one that you didn't turn up in Tel Aviv. But it was on a very simple theme. What happens when we feel we totally lose it? We lost all our dharma. We lost all our wisdom. We've arrived in a place where we lost it. We feel the whole thing collapsed, and I'm nothing. And it happens. It happens that we struggle. Never mind our meditations. We will struggle because we are human beings in samsara. Until Buddhahood, more or less, we will be vulnerable. But it's then that compassion becomes really clear. Because then nothing else works. Then compassion is really needed. And with the wisdom, compassion and wisdom together allow us to be in the heart of the storm, the eye of the storm, right in the middle of the vulnerability of being a human being, and be absolutely okay. Because wisdom and compassion just makes sure that we're not drowned by vulnerability of being a human being. of being a living being. The more we can kind of empty ourselves of being full of me and my issues and what I need and what I want and my interests and so on, then the less we'll be, then we will not be overwhelmed by trouble and difficulty. Because emptiness is just going in the opposite direction. We need to be a person defending ourselves to feel the full weight of suffering when things don't work for us. But the more empty we are, the less we suffer, because there's nobody there to feel the victim. There's less of me. It's not absolute. Or we're me, or we're not a me. It's gradual. And so the more empty we are, the more we take the side of awareness and not the side of forgetting or the problem or the issues or what I need or what I need to be or what's missing. The more we take we live in that awareness place, the more we are in a way empty. And the more empty we are, the more we can take suffering. And that's the picture of the Buddha's long ears. You know, these ears, long ears. And in the Buddhist icons, iconography, and the ears are because he's so empty that he can take and listen to the suffering of all beings and not be overwhelmed by the pain of all beings because of emptiness. So it's just simply we can take more. And the more we have to be behind our guards, Haganah, our Chomot, the less suffering we can take. The more difficult it is for us. Because we're busy building guards against, keeping out difficulty, struggling against, trying to preserve comfort, trying to protect our castle, like the Buddha's castle of comfort. So the emptiness is our actual defense against, is a real defense against a suffering. But if we are too busy with wisdom, if the wisdom direction, the awareness direction is too dominating, we can get into a kind of spiritual spaciness or dreaminess or disconnection, or we can be great Buddhist philosophers and we can be wonderful, wise thinking Buddhists. And it can make us disconnected again. And then we will find ourselves vulnerable. So wisdom, when it's too much and not balanced by compassion, will put us in clouds, put us in other places. It's like this very nice phrase, okay, believe in God, but don't forget to tie your camel. It's interesting that we had a retreat of brain scientists some years ago. I was teaching a retreat. We had 60 scientists and researchers that mostly researching the brain in Israel. And it was a 4-day retreat. And then they were talking about their research project. And one woman said she was researching meditators, and connected to really what we were saying, researching if meditators have less prejudice than other people. Because meditators should if everything we're saying is true, they should be more open to others, to strangers, to different differences, less in the boundary of me and other. There should be less difference between me and other, because everything we're saying is reducing that difference. So she said she did the research with meditators to find out if they had less prejudice. What's prejudice in Hebrew? They're like this, they're like that. And she found they had more. So I said I didn't believe it. I said to her, show me who did you do your research on? She said, I did it in a New Age festival, on people that said they belonged to the New Age. I said, forget it. I'd rather have the people walking on the street in Diesengorf. There'll be less prejudice in the street in Diesengorf than in the New Age festival. I'm joking a bit, but clearly, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's clearly because meditation is authentic. It has to be authentic, and if it's not authentic, and if the wisdom is not authentic, it can lead us into all kinds of places. And so, wisdom needs to be balanced with compassion. Otherwise, we go off. There's a story in Midrash about a guy, a rabbi or a sage, who went off for years and years to a cave. And after some years, he went out of the cave and was walking on the beach, on the sea, in Akko, by the sea. And he was walking with his son. And as he was walking, he looked around at all the people and said, he saw them all working and fishing and bathing, and he said, how ugly are Bnei Avraham? They're so ugly. Who are? And I presume because they didn't keep Shabbat or whatever they were not doing. And his son looked at him and said, you spend all these years in the cave and that's what you come out with? And he said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And the son said, no, don't say you're sorry to me. You have to say you're sorry to God, because you didn't do the job. You go back to the cave now and finish the job, which he did. So it can lead us to be withdrawn or again or disconnected again if we're too much on the side of paying attention, obsessiveness with mind, analytics, etc., etc. But compassion can also, without wisdom, namely without the emptiness, can also bring problems. And we talked about some of them yesterday. For example, the urgency to help everybody, which is a self, part of me, something in the pattern or tavnit of having to help others all the time and not being able to help ourselves too well, or other kinds of, or anger at social injustice. And so many, many organizations that are trying to do good, and if you sit in the Vad Manahel meetings, it's an absolute disaster. Everyone's shouting at everybody else. And there are organizations, NGOs, amutot, trying to help society. And if you go behind the doors there, and you see how much people are fighting each other. So it's compassion needs to be balanced with that wisdom, and the wisdom of emptiness, the wisdom of openness, Otherwise, it also goes off. So when the two are balanced, there's this beautiful place of the Buddha's long ears, our ability to hear and feel and empathize with the pain of others and not be overwhelmed and not be destroyed by it, and the ability to see pain and melt it and be there in the heart of it and bring compassion to yourself, to others, to anybody, without choice, without selection, without prejudice. There's a quote from a British poet called Auden, who said, how should we like it if the stars were to burn with a passion for us we could not return? If equal affection cannot be, let the more loving one be me. I don't know if you understood that. It maybe needs more English. He just said how is it if the stars were to burning the stars, a kohavim baharim, im as a passion for us that we couldn't give back. But if it's not equal between the stars, a kohavim, and myself, I want to be the more loving stars more than they would love me, im ze lo shaveh. It's basically what he's saying. Just a nice, it's a beautiful phrase. It has, when balanced, wisdom and compassion bring huge warmth and heart to the simplest things of life. The awareness opens to the magic, just like Thich Nhat Hanh was saying, to the magical moments of life. And nothing needs to be special then, because everything is special. There isn't anything that's not special. There isn't anything that's not important. There isn't anything that's not meaningful. It makes everything full of meaning and precious. It's just, that's why we fly, with the wisdom and the compassion. I mean, people sometimes ask, what does Buddhism say about the meaning of life? Kind of, mashmud b'chayim. Or feel an even worse question, the purpose of life, tachlit of life. And Buddhism doesn't say anything about this, because Buddhism would say that this is a wrong question. Life doesn't have a meaning because everything is meaningful. There isn't anything that's not full of meaning. So don't look with a mind for meaning in life. Just open your eyes and open your heart, and then everything has meaning. There isn't anything without meaning. Everything matters. I think that's actually a good place to stop. Two good last words, everything matters. It's a good enough place to stop. So let's take a few minutes of quiet.